and welcome to the Retro Asylum podcast. With me is Mr. Christopher O'Regan.
How Hello. You doing? I'm well. How are you, Dee?
I'm very well. I'm starting to get hungry. Stuff. This is very early for us.
It is.
We normally record of an evening.
We do, but we decided what is the to, time? You know.
It's about 20 to 11 20 on to a 11, Sunday morning. Yep. I've been in the shed for hours trying to tidy it up because I'm working on this Outrun Arcade 1-Up project, and I've had bits everywhere. In fact, I've still got blocks of wood and all sorts all around me. So,
how's that
very
going?
It's slow. I was hoping it would be a nice, quick project, but no, I've messed things up on it. It's been a bit more tricky than I was expecting. So, quite a bit of woodwork involved. I've had to chop bits off because it was a Street Fighter 2 arcade cab, the original arcade 1-Up Generation 1, which are really cheap and nasty.
Right. These are the smaller scale ones, still arcade 1-Up, is it?
Or? Yeah, they're... I can't remember what scale they are.
Two-thirds scale, aren't they?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, you have to have it up on a riser, and even then, it's still quite short, so I'm going to have to add something to the riser to extend the height of it, because the Star Wars one that I've got, it's not massive, but it's playable with me standing there, and I'm about 5'11".
Outright, you don't want to hunch over that. Yeah,
exactly, and it's a little bit shorter than the Star Wars cab at the moment, so I've got a... extend the riser somehow, which I know how to do it. It's just getting around to doing that. That's the last of my worries. I've had to chop bits off the cab. I've got to make sure the steering wheel all fits. I've had a bit of a nightmare with a bezel, but one of our listeners has kindly sent me a spare proper arcade 1-Up bezel. Thanks, guy. Very kind of you. We're getting there slowly but surely. So hopefully by the next episode, I'll have it up and running. I am going to do a video and show how I've bodged it.
Yeah. I'm sure you haven't.
I have in places, but there you go.
I admire your tenacity to get to make these things because it's no mean feat. How's the LCD screen with it? Does it work okay? Look all right?
Well, the thing is, the screen that came with it, I bought the cab, it was £80, this Street Fighter 2 arcade cab, knowing it was broken, but I thought the screen would be working. I thought it'd just be the game board that's blown or something. It turned out to be the whole lot. Nothing works on it.
Oh, God.
So, I've had to buy a Dell monitor, 17-inch, which is exactly the same size. That fits in. I've had to cut a few bits of metal here and there, which was really fun. I've got a working monitor with the shaders on and what have you. It looks quite nice running. But last night I hooked the speakers up to it for the first time and I'm getting a bit of jittering here and there. So it might be the shaders are a bit too much for it or something ain't quite right. I'm using Batozera. I think it is the front end.
Okay.
And I tried Chase HQ and Outrun, and every now and then there's just a little stutter with the sound. So I won't have to live with that. The picture ain't too bad, to be fair.
No.
I mean, you've got to, it's not a proper arcade cab. It's just a cheap alternative. So it'll do me for now.
Well, everyone wants an Outrun cab. Well, ultimately, the big one you sit in, but that's just ridiculous.
it would take up the rest of the room. No, not really.
You'd have to take out
everything.
Wouldn't
be able to get in it.
No, you'd have like, here's my arcade area. Well, it used to be, I had lots of stuff in there. Now I just have one. I mean, it's just the Outrun thing. And even then, it doesn't quite fit.
Exactly, that would not be good. But, a stand-up cab, you're probably looking about £3,000 or more, which I haven't got, and I haven't really got the space. A lot of the driving cabs are quite high, and because the ceiling slopes, because it is a shed, it'd be a bit awkward. So Yeah, no, this will be a cheap alternative, and it'll still work out. You know, I've not spent a lot. Just, I mean, the monitor was about £22, I think, off of eBay, which I had a bit of a nightmare, which I was discussing the last time I was on. I bought two monitors, which was a pickup. You know, you pay eBay, you go to the guy's house, pick the stuff up, and he never replied to any of my messages. So I ended up getting my money back on those and then sourcing another monitor. So, yeah, it's all fun and games. It's just, I know.
It's just awful.
Never heard from him at all. Strange, but there you go.
Weird. Some weird people think it's okay to ghost people when doing business exchanges. Like, no.
The thing was, he had plenty of good feedback. It wasn't like it was his first sell or anything like that, you know.
Right,
so maybe he'd been hit by a bus. I don't know. But
who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
You don't know.
So, speaking for myself, because clearly you've been delving into things. My most recent Evercade purchase is the Delphine collection.
Nice.
Was it Delphine? No, Delphine. I started playing a lot of Flashback. And that game's, it's a weird one. I forgot how weird it was. Because most, when you play Flashback now, you go, oh, okay, I'll just play the jungle level bit and run around and shoot things. And that's fun. But when you actually start going, okay, I'll actually properly play this, it's a bit clunky. And there's like adventure game aspects to it, but there's one.
Yeah.
There's timed things. So if you don't do a thing in a certain period of time, you die. It's just like,
right.
I forgot Delphine liked doing that kind of thing.
Mm, yeah. It's so, been a long while since I've played them, but
yeah,
I remember that I had it on the Amiga, and really the Mega Drive versions were the more definitive.
Yeah, apparently I did not know this, but that's the lead platform for Flashback. I was not aware of this. So, yeah.
Nice.
And I've also been playing Evercade Cottage 5, but we'll talk about that in an episode that you may not have heard of already. I don't know when we're releasing this. Who knows? Probably after the episode. So, time. It's a strange thing in podcast land.
It is.
It's very strange. But let's talk a little bit about news, shall we?
Go for it.
Because there's two items that I think are worthy of discussion. I think the headline one, let's not lead up to it. Let's just do it. What's your thoughts on the new Mr. Multisystem from Heber? These are the people who make who are linked to the Retro Cave. RMC as was. What's your thoughts on this?
It looks quite nice. I think if you haven't got a Mister already, then it's a nice way of getting into it. Mm-hmm. Especially if you like your console style systems. For me, I've already got a Mister, it doesn't really add anything that I haven't got. I mean, there's a few features, but it's nothing that can't be done on a basic Mister setup. As far as I'm aware. So,
I think the biggest change between this, the Multisystem 1 and Multisystem 2, is that this one actually has a full
FPGA system.
Built into
it. The D10 Nano clone.
That's right. And it is not, so it doesn't have, whereas my original, because I've got the Multisystem 1.
Yeah.
Which I've used to enclose my DE10. So it was basically just a AI port, IO port system for you to bolt in. You put RAM in as well. That's all there. It's all okay. But I think the biggest negative and the biggest positive they got on this new one is that the SD card is no longer... basically, there have been times when I've taken the SD card out on the multisystem, put it back in again, it disappeared into the case. Like,
even with my Mister, I have to do it with tweezers.
Yeah, you have to. And I think really,
it's very, very small. It's in a very awkward place. If it's in a case, you know, which
what
obviously
you
most
be doing,
people.
Yeah. I was just saying, just the thought is that really you shouldn't be taking that SD card out at all. You shouldn't have to.
No, because, but.
No, no. And because you should be able to use it on your LAN and access the files on it via your LAN.
Yeah, which you can do. I mean, with my setup, because there's actually two SD card ports, there's a second one, which I use for all my Spectrum Next stuff.
Right.
So for that, you can't actually access it via the net.
Remotely.
Yeah, remotely. So that you do have to take out. And again, it's in a very fiddly place. And there is a slight gap. And if, you know, our eyes are getting bad as we get older.
Dark
in here.
Later.
Yeah. You know, you got to put the card in and then you think, oh, I've missed the SD card port. It's just slid inside the case. And you can hear it rattling around.
Yeah.
You've got to take the case apart or, you know, you might be lucky if you shake it and it might just slide back out.
Might just pop out. But no, that's exactly what happened last time I used the... Because I was messing around with it. I was putting lots of games and stuff on my Mister, and I was just taking the SD card out to do it and putting it back in again. Resulted in, just don't do it. Just don't, everyone, if you haven't missed it. But no, this new one looks very exciting. They've basically added ports and made it more user friendly, but it's completely backwards compatible with the other one. They're making like snack cartridges, so you put
quite interesting the way they've done those. Yeah. And like I say, it looks nice. You know, it's obviously it's a 3D printed case, which is the only downside. It's not, you know, a full manufactured thing.
Vacuum molded
but
stuff,
you know, it looks nice. It's consoleized, which my one I think looks like a little Ghostbusters trap because
I've seen it. It's bright blue. Yeah, is it blue?
Mine's in a dark acrylic case now.
That's it,
I changed it a while back. But, you know, it's got little lights on it. I'm happy with the way it looks because I'm concentrating on the games.
Yes, it's a little tower, isn't it?
It's just a little box, a little tower. Yeah, a lot of people, it's the easiest thing to put together, I found. It really is, you know, it just plugs on top of each other. You put the case on, few screws, you're done. But a lot of people don't want that. They just want a console that comes out of a box, you plug it in, and away you go.
Plug it in and off you go.
There's two versions. You've got the digital version and the analog, which does digital and can also be hooked up to a CRT. That's a little bit more expensive. The digital version for if you're just going to be using LCD screens,
I've got
cheaper.
The prices up here. It's £204 odd dog price for the digital version.
Yep.
And £252 for the analog version. And they're also selling a couple of other things. They've got an LCD enclosure kit because they don't actually sell LCDs.
Yeah, that looks like the. That looked quite nice when I saw Richard demonstrating it. Like a PS1 screen, I guess.
Yeah.
Folds,
yeah,
doesn't it?
ONE 101. Yeah.
Yeah.
PS1 thing. And then they've also got a dock, a slice tray for input. I think you get the, you get NES, and a bunch of other ports you can use. It's not no real interest to me, as like you. But for those who haven't got one yet and didn't want to actually fork out hundreds and hundreds of pounds for a DE10.
Yeah, I mean, there's different ways of getting into the Mister now because you've got there are cheaper alternatives because the DE10 Nano has now been cloned. I can't remember the name of the guy. Is it Tacky?
Yeah.
You know, there's various, there's on AliExpress, there's a D10 Nano, or it just comes as a Mister, and that's quite cheap as well. I don't know what the quality's like, but, you know, there's now cheaper alternatives to getting into the Mister. But this looks like a decent product. It looks nice, very consoleized. If you haven't got a Mister, and you're based in the UK, which a lot of our, probably the majority of our listeners are, this is a nice way of getting it, I think.
Yeah. And, if you're going to, actually importing it from the UK, because it is built in the UK, it's manufactured and assembled in the UK.
Yeah.
So import duties won't be so bad in North America, I'm just saying. a bit of topical stuff there.
Yeah.
And the last piece of news I want to talk about, which is, we haven't spoken about it in the show since it happened, but for some reason Bethesda thought brought it upon themselves to re-release Oblivion.
Right, okay.
Almost 20 years after it was originally released, early mid-2000s. And it's available on Game Pass. It's £50. It is a remaster. Right. It's a real, like, you know, they rebuilt it pretty much from the ground up, but they've kept a lot of the original stuff. And that's, while visually it looks very impressive, the core gameplay is just, oh dear. It's really clunky. Things have really evolved and moved on since since that game was released. And I just can't get past how clunky it is. I just can't. I tried, and I'm not alone in this experience. Many people have downloaded it and bought it. It's sold truckloads because people have fond memories of that game. Memories is the appropriate phrase here. And but when they actually play it and they compare it to things like Skyrim or Baldur's Gate 3 or Mass Effect or any other later games that come out after the release of Oblivion, it hasn't held up. In my humble opinion, it's just too clunky, and there's too many aspects of it. There's only so much you can suspend your disbelief. There's too much. It just pushes you away in many regards. So, yeah, not happy.
Oh, that's a shame. I've never played it. I'll be honest.
No, it's probably not your thing. But
a 20-year-old game, to me, it still feels modern.
But it is not, and just basically the reason I mention it is it's nice that they did it. They kind of did a soft launch, not a soft launch, but it was a hot drop. I don't know what they call it. The PR people will know. But it just said, we're going to announce the game, and now we're going to release it. There, you can go get it right now. You know, right. That's a big thing these days. People make a
press release. Well, if it's that clunky, maybe I would get on with it.
Yeah, you may. You may do. But I did played it 2 or 3 hours of it, and I was kind of getting into it. But eventually, towards the end, I was like, I just can't look past this stuff. I just can't. So some games are timeless, as you and I know, Dean. Some games are games and wondrous creations. But some, no.
See, no. It's like GoldenEye. I still enjoy it. I know the frame rate is quite slow at times, but I really enjoy it. Whereas a lot of people, especially if they weren't into the N64, then they've experienced, you know, first-person shooters on the PC, which are silky smooth and very fast and control totally different. They play GoldenEye and think, what the hell was all the fuss about? It's rubbish.
Yeah, you know,
some people like it, some people don't. So
that's all console had, though, at the time. You've got to understand that when GoldenEye was at its height, you had people playing Quake 2. Or something, on the PC. Although you could play Quake 2 on the
Dreamcast,
on the N64, on the Dreamcast, but on the N64 you could play Quake 2, and it's very good. It's very good on the N64.
I've never played it on the N64. Funnily enough, it's played on the Dreamcast, but
that's it for news and stuff. Everyone, we are going to move on to the main event because we're going to have. A chap called Paul. He's made a business called Pixel Jockey. And we're going to chat to him about what he's been doing. He's making these collections of games, Spectrum games, and it's all presented in this rather plush layout of, like, you get this sleeve, and then you get inside, and then you get another sleeve inside. It's got this nice sort of like surround, and this is the Horus games, all three of them. And also, you know, so it's all kind of spoilering here, but we're going to talk about the person behind the creation of these things. They're rather special. They're very nice. I think I've got them in the wrong order. Oh my God, no.
Oh,
what have I done?
No.
I'll be thrown out of Retro Asylum for Port Horus games in the wrong order. I think that's the right order. I think so. But no, he kickstarted these successfully, and he's done two packs. You know, we're going to be talking about the creator of those. So that's really, really, really exciting stuff. And he's also made pins and everything. Look, pins.
Wow.
pins. So, yeah, it's really gone to town, but it's basically a celebration of
Horus,
of Spectrum Games.
Yeah. But
really presented in such a really, yeah, really gone to town.
Swanky way.
Like, yeah. You know, limited run do this kind of stuff, don't they? But they're kind of out of favour these days. But, yeah, it's kind of like a Spectrum answer to limited run. If limited run did Spectrum games, it would be like this.
Yes.
So this is kind of cool. So really looking forward to talking to Paul. We've got a whole raft of questions for him, which we prepared. And hopefully he's getting on that. But, yeah, we're really looking forward to chatting to him about it. What's your thoughts on this kind of stuff being?
Oh, I think it's great. It's nice to see Spectrum games being reproduced with such great care and attention. The presentation is lovely on them, on the ones that I've seen. And, you know, as long as he's obviously got the rights to do so, then I'm all for it. Especially if there's certain games that are a bit harder to come by and they get reproduced, you know, make it easier for people to get hold of them. But yeah, no, very nice. Very nice indeed.
We can talk ages about Oblivion, but we're not going to do that. Let's move on to what we're going to talk with Paul here. Paul from Pixel Jockey has joined us. Paul, hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. So Paul is Pixel Jockey. Tell us a bit about what you're about, and then we can delve into the raft of questions that we've prepared for you.
Well, I guess what we do sort of is we just re-release old ZX Spectrum games on original media in the form of tape box sets. And we also try to produce merchandise as well that sort of maybe wouldn't have been available back in the day. Things like mugs, badges, posters, things like that. Even stuff like T-shirts, which I'll probably get onto later. But yeah, it's just to sort of have that sort of nostalgic feel for things that we maybe didn't have back in the day because merchandising probably wasn't as big. And it's also sort of getting these games together, especially when there's they have some lineage, like the Horus box set, for example, all three of them in one place, and just making a nice box for it, and then having this really cool original media collector's item that people can buy and either physically play or put on their shelves.
Yeah, I do both, I'm happy to say.
That's good.
It is, yeah, because games will be played, not put in bits of molded plastic.
I agree.
How did you come up with this idea of re-releasing games in this packaged form? I mean, I'm showing a Horus one here, but there's two that have so far been released. But listen on, everyone, because we've got an announcement for the third one. There you go. Bit of a spoiler, but if you listen on to the end, because it's exciting news. But yeah, this is the 3D... Combat Classics one, which is awesome. But anyway, so tell how what idea did this spring from? Is it sort of a pub conversation, or is it something you've been brewing in your mind for many years? Or a bit of
it's got a really, I guess it's like I've got a strange start to it. If you cast your mind back to the Vega Plus Indiegogo campaign, where the sort of ill-fated mobile ZX Spectrum, we all know what happened, so we won't go over that. But as you guys probably did, a lot of us backed that. I think I was one of the first 200 backers with that one. As soon as I seen the article on the BBC website, I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I'm going to be able to play Dizzy and Chaos and Rebel Star and all these games on the move, even though I could do that anyway with my DS and to an extent my phone. So we joined the Facebook group for that, the official one. I think it was RCL at the time. And we would just all chat on there. So we would get to talk to people like Paul Andrews and Darren Melbourne. They're the guys sort of behind it, the driving force behind it. And sort of to a lesser extent, the other people involved in that company. So as a graphic designer, I used to put up like concept art. And I put up some concept art of what I had imagined the box would look like for this Vega Plus. And I thought to myself, okay, cool. So just did some renders and I popped them up. And it seemed to get some traction. People really sort of liked the designs and it was a sort of warm reception for it. So then fast forward a little bit, we all know what happened with the Vega. There was another chap called Graham Kenny. I'm sure you won't mind me mentioning his name. He started another Facebook group after the whole thing went down, and it was called the Vega Survivors Group. And there was lots of people who basically backed the Vega, and we were all down there talking about it and just following the court stuff and this and that. And there's lots of active people in there. So what happened was those guys, Graham and a few other guys, or I think one other guy, bought up a load of the old sort of stock, like the old, I think it was liquidation stock from one of the guys, one of the partners who made the Vega for that company. And they started to cobble a few together. So we managed to get our hands on, I managed to get my hands on a working Vega. I can't put my hand on it at the moment, but it is here somewhere. And I use the term loosely when I say working, because, it was notorious for the buttons and things like that. So then I on that group, I sort of said, hey, look, listen, what if I took some of this concept stuff and I did a Kickstarter for the actual box so we could all have something nice to put it in. And there was enough interest to actually start a Kickstarter for that. So I did that. Pixel Jockey didn't exist, so I did that under my own name. And this is the box.
Oh, very nice. It looks like the joystick from the Amstrad stuff.
Yeah, the Plus 2.
They did the same size styling as that.
That's it.
Horrific joystick. No offense, Paul, but everyone knows that joystick. It was so bad. You know the one I'm talking about, Dean, right?
As a Plus 2 owner, I recognise the box design straight away, It's Amstrad branding of Spectrum stuff.
That's exactly right, yeah. Because I was a bit late to the party in my life. We had a Plus 2 rather than growing up with a ZX Spectrum original with the tape deck. I had the Amstrad Plus 2A, I think it was at the time.
The black one.
And that's it. And this box is just reminiscent of that sort of childhood nostalgia that I had for it. Because I used to say, ooh, that's so cool. So, like, the box basically was just, same thing inside.
Yeah.
You opened it up and you had this little, I even had a little manual that we made. So it had a little...
So it's all the stuff it should have come with if it had been released properly.
So this had a little manual, and this is actually based on a Word document, which was an early draft of the instructions. So I just, as a designer, I just went, I'll just go to town and actually make it into a manual. So that's
wonderful.
That's what that was. So with that, for the backers, I think it was about 120 backers, I did this little cassette. And what it was a stretch goal. So we had like $4,000 or something like that. And I had this little cassette, and the inlay for the cassette had the person's name on it and their backer number, just as a thank you. So I packaged that with it and we sent those out, and we got a really good reception from that. And I thought to myself, well, hang on, what if we actually produce cassettes? And that was basically where Pixel Lucky came from. I just thought to myself, well, that's cool. We could actually maybe try to get the rights to some of these games and just repackage them and reproduce them and try to get the artwork as close as sort of I can to the original without using old logos which can't be used anymore.
It feels like to me, and this does sound like I'm batting it up a bit, Paul, but it just feels like if these games are still being released properly today, this is how they'd look. The quality of the printing, the colour, the vibrancy, the stuff we take for granted now. The level, we don't realise this, but when you pick up old magazines, like, why is it so dull? Why are the colours so washed out? Because they didn't have the technology then to do what we do now.
That's exactly right.
You pick up a copy of The Edge these days, which I do every now and again. Still celebrate that magazine. It's amazing. And it's just popped, leaps out. It's almost eye-bleeding. Yeah. Whereas, you pick up a copy of Crash, no offense to Crash fans, it's every colour is slightly muddy because that's the technology they had. So for me, looking at these and just seeing how everything is so defined and bright, and I'm sort of taking them out here and it's just like these horses and spiders. And look, this wasn't, the colouring, it wasn't that bright. It wasn't. That's good.
I've got here the we'll take the Hungry Horse, but I've got one of the originals here as well, so you can sort of see it's a little bit washed out.
It's a little bit washed out.
Mm.
But what are you going to do?
But it's time and ink. Plus, like you said, it's the printing process as well. They're probably going to be printed litho back in the day, but I believe these are digitally printed.
Yeah, exactly. It's been 40 years, everyone.
Yeah.
Come on. It's just the times have advanced significantly. And just saying, Paul, you're making a wonderful contribution saying, let's just reimagine what would happen if these games are still being made to this day.
Yeah,
and it looks like this.
I appreciate that. That's
what really leapt out for me. Of like, let's celebrate these games. You know, what's really lovely is that one of the things I have discovered is rediscovering these games, because I wasn't a massive Hungry Horace fan. I admit it, I wasn't. I was a big Ultimate Play the Game fan. I loved those stuff. Lords of Midnight was one of my favorites, and still is to this day. So doing this, and like, I'm going to back this because this is awesome. This is a lovely idea, and I started playing these games properly. Properly, they are really fun. They're very good.
They're massively hard. I find massively hard though, especially
Hungry Horace. There's one, oh dear, but still, it's lovely, and it's on the Spectrum as well. All three of them are on the Spectrum. We've got to unlock the other two, but three of them are on there. So
I do appreciate that, Chris. Thank you. I've also appreciate the support because it's you guys that make these. It isn't me. I can draw the pictures and I can sort out the production. And I can send them all out. But without the support, it's nothing, you know. So it humbles me, and I know that sounds a bit cheesy, but it really does humble me that people, you know, they do support it and they do back it, because I'm just a guy sitting here in a little house in Somerset. You know, that box that you have in your hand was made on my coffee table. So every single box is handmade by me, with my double side tape, my glue gun, you know.
It's mad because we was at the Crash event a while back, and your products were on show there.
Yeah,
and they just stood out so much. We were all attracted to them. You know, there was how many of us? Five of us, I think, and every one of us said how nice they were. And
thanks.
Yeah, it's just very appealing.
I do remember buying the pins, because there's pins, everyone, because of course there is. This is the Horoscope skiing pin. Not sure you can make that out.
And Chris often goes out to work with all these pins all over him.
I do.
Don't you?
I do.
I have that very pin on one of my coats when I go out.
I do have a pin collection, pinballs. I've been traveling. I go to PAX a lot, in the Arcade Expo, and they started the whole pin revolution, I think. They did pin the arcade collection, and I've been doing it for so many years, and I've got loads and loads. I didn't actively collect them. They just gave them to me because I was pressed and stuff. And over the years, I've just picked up all sorts of pins, and these are pride of place on that board, I'm happy to say.
There's more coming.
I'm sure. But let's keep a powder dry for that one. And then, this is my favourite. This is the one that gets me. This is the 3D Star Strike one. I just love this one.
That's cool.
I'm going to zoom in a little bit on this. Such a good game. Such a good, just timeless,
if
that
if
one.
If you have the Star Strike 2 badge, I can let you into a little secret. Chris Wilkins from Crash owns the rights to these games now, and I work with Chris and Crash to produce the 3D Combat Classic stuff, including the badges. But there's an Easter egg that even he doesn't know about yet, which, hi Chris, if you're watching this, by the way, is that the score on the 3D Star Strike is basically the Kickstarter goal for that Kickstarter.
There you go.
It's the exclusive. And no one knows that.
You do now.
Yeah.
That kind of leads us on to our next question, doesn't it, Chris? I mean, you mentioned
Chris Wilkins.
Yeah,
do you want
Chris
to answer
Wilkins,
that? We can alternate between you and me, Dean. So if you do two and I'll do three, et cetera.
Yeah.
Perfect, mate.
I was going to ask how you go about getting the rights to these games to get them published on cassette.
Well, the first one, the Horace collection, that was, as I said, as a follow-on from the Vega one that I did. So I had to start a company around it. So I thought Pixel Jockey, it's a great name because it's like a slang term for a graphic designer, which I am. So I am a Pixel Jockey. So I thought, we'll go with that. And it's got a good sort of, we can use that for Spectrum stuff. So what I did was I was having a conversation with Paul Andrews, and he has a few companies, and he is one of the chaps behind the Spectrum, as you guys have probably sort of know about. I was having a chat with Paul, and he was talking about re-releases of games, And I said, well, have a look at our back catalogue from Andrews UK, which is I think the arm that takes care of a lot of that stuff. So I went on, had a little look, and I thought, the thing that jumped out at me was Horace. I thought, wow, that's fantastic. And I thought, everyone had Horace Whiskey in, you know, where we all had that growing up. So I had that cassette knocking about. So I got back to Paul and said, look, can we get the rights to reproduce this? What if I just sent you a proposal? So I got a document together, which was like a pack shot with the three tapes and stuff and how I'd imagine it would look. And Paul just went, yeah, this looks great. So, you know, I did the due diligence with him as well and spoke to him and we spoke about the rights and, you know, how they acquired them. So I was satisfied that, you know, we could use it with, we signed the documentation with them. And yeah, and that's where that comes from. The other one, the second one as well, we did 3D Combat Classics with Chris Wilkins from Crash. Again, I due diligence with that. I talked to Chris about it, and he was like, "Yes, I have these rights. I bought them, and you know, we got that up, and everything was all fine." So we were confident we could use the games and the artwork for both of those sets. You know, just through conversations we had, looking at documents and things like that. So yeah, it's just a conversation really, and put a proposal together for both guys, and they both went, "Yeah, cool, let's run with that."
Yeah, and there's the third set, which you're going to reveal the end of this show.
That was a little bit more complex, but yeah.
I bet it was. But yeah, okay. So the next question we've got is how did you curate these? How did you select? How did you come up with the idea? Because it sounds like it's a mixture between opportunity and the ability to, and path of least resistance, but also, you know, I think Chorus speaks for itself as a perfect starter. But yeah, the 3D Combat Classics one, I never really correlated, like, oh yeah, they did do a collection of games in like a 3D manner. I mean, I wasn't familiar with 3D Tank Duel, and then I still realized that what
they're
it was.
They're all great games, aren't they? So
yeah, yeah. So how did you come up with like the selection? Because you going to Chris Wilkins and saying, "Oh yeah, we're gonna have a selection again." Why these three? Why what? You know, how did you come up with that?
As you said, the Horus one's straightforward enough because you know they were the three original games. But the with the 3D Star Strike ones, they were the real time 3D. They were under the real time 3D brand. And I spoke to Chris about it, and those games were in a row, so we had. You know, the first one was Tank Duel, then you had Star Strike and Star Strike 2, and they're the same people that make them, and they used the same engine, as far as I'm aware, and it's just sort of groundbreaking 3D. You know, they're not the quickest of games, if you ever play them, but yeah, they just seem to naturally go together for me, you know, given who made them and what they were.
I have played 3D Star Strike and Star Strike 2 on the Next, which, those of you don't know, be surprised very few listeners don't, you can increase the CPU cycles. And they become very different games.
Someone said that to me as well. They said, if you ever play any of those three, you give the bump the speed up a bit. And yeah. They're a bit sort of, yeah.
They become, yeah, quite.
Strike actually puts the official Star Wars conversion on the Spectrum to shame in a way. It was done years earlier. It had sound, whereas the Spectrum version of Star Wars, they actually had to re-release it on budget with sound. The original release, it was completely silent. Yeah. I don't know if that was a bug or something, but you know, for many, it was Star Wars at home years ahead of that conversion. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Really even Chris Wilkins said the same thing to me when we were talking about them to interview him for the Kickstarter. We went up to his lockup where they've got all sorts of really cool stuff up there. He's got arcade machines and, you know, Vectrex knocking around and rare stuff.
Vectrex plural. I mean, Dean and I are big Vectrex fans. I've got a working one.
There's
as
one
Dean
to my right.
we could. You said the V word there, Paul. Very dangerous, Dean and I.
Yeah, get started.
I've only ever played one.
Oh, right.
You've got to get one.
Yeah, but I can see it's really a question of what fits, what's popular, what's knowledgeable. Also, you know, discovering. I'm really happy I discovered this 3D tank game, a dual game. So I was not aware of it. Not aware of it at all.
Okay.
But,
it's like Battlezone, isn't it? It's
Battlezone, yeah.
That's what real time used to do. They used to see an arcade game and say, well, we'll do it on the Spectrum.
It's
without a license. It's
just really proud of this one. So, yeah, so the thing about really proud of this one, 3D Combat Classics, because it's so basic in its design. And me being a designer, I've been a designer for nearly 30 years, and I've worked in packaging predominantly in publications, and just seeing how basic this is. I'm reproducing this as well with just a black background and a silver foil. I was chatting to Ian Oliver, the chap whose game this is, and he told me that they did this in his student digs, again on a coffee table, and they just paid people in beer and pizza to put the original ones of these together to send out by, I think it was mail order at the time, because that was their first game.
Yeah, that's what he did, yeah.
Fascinating stuff. But I tried to get it as truly original as I could. But to find an original one of these, even on like auction sites like eBay, they're very expensive. So I had to do it from electronic files and stuff, because, you know, I think that's over 100 quid or something to buy one. And they were, wow. That's only when they came up, you know. So I do always try to get sort of originals for scans and things like that. But I think this is the only case where I didn't for this single one. But
yeah.
I was really, really happy with the way it turned out. I mean, it really pops that silver foil. I love it.
All right.
Looks very nice.
Hey, next question, mate.
Yeah, what testing do you do to make sure the games will load on various cassette players?
Our production partner, they specialise in producing cassettes, not just audio cassettes, but obviously audio for computers. So they have a couple of different testing rigs down there that I've seen. I also get prototypes made and sent up to me, and I test them on 48K with a tape deck attached, and also my Plus 2A as well, which I've got sort of attached to a CRT somewhere around there. But yeah, I always test them just to make sure, you know. And I test them if it's 48K or 128, depending on, you know, which machine it is.
And do you get any returns at all, or if you had a good success rate?
I haven't had one, and it's... And that's it's amazing to even think that. I've never really thought about it until you asked that, but I've never had one return. I've had a couple of damaged cassettes where inevitably, like one or two will just you know, get damaged in the post, but I'll just send out another dual case or another set, you know.
Nice.
It's I've tested it on Plus 2, and I've tested it on a variety of, even the WS Swiss deck, the brown thing. Remember that thing, the big brown thing that was way too big than it needed to be, but they just did it for effect. The WS Smith had a branded beta set or beta cassette sort of cassette player. It's huge.
Right, okay.
Yeah, the big, and it's just like it had like load and save ports on the back rather than ear and mic and stuff.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, and it was a big deal. I never had one as a kid, but I always wanted one, and of course I've got one now. It works. It's the one that loads most things, I found. But then there's a Sony one that a lot of people use as well. It's really standard, so that's cool. But no, all works for me. This is a question I have to ask for our other fans of other platforms that aren't into Color Clash, who are heretics, as you know, Dean. These are terrible people.
Baffles me. Platforms? What other platforms?
Exactly. Are there any plans as the rolling success of Pixel Jockey rolls on, which I'm definitely in favour of? Any plans to expand into the other two platforms that we know and love, i.e., the C64 and the Amstrad CPC?
So the Amstrad, I had no dealings with at all growing up. My friend had one. I think he had the green monitor with it.
Green screen,
well.
Yeah. It's a Greenbow, it. Greenbow Islands.
Greenbow Islands.
New Greenbow story.
Yeah, new Greenbow
story. he had one, and I think I played it once. So I personally don't have that sort of connection to the Amstrad. The Commodore 64, though, we did get one. Years later, when they were cheap, you know, I think that was in the early 90s when I think I bought it off a friend for like 50 quid. And it was a boxed Commodore 64, like 200 games and the tape deck and things.
Yeah.
So there, I do have a sort of, I do have the fond memories of the Commodore 64. But what I started out to do, because we're still in our infancy, is to produce stuff for the things that I know and that I can sort of get behind and put, you know, put some heart and some love into it. But yeah, we've been considering all sorts of bits and pieces. Definitely Commodore 64, maybe even some Amiga discs or something. You know, there's lots of ideas floating around, but we don't want to. We certainly don't want to run before we can walk. You know, because it is still in its infancy. But we've got a few ideas about branching out into different things. We don't really want to. You know, I certainly wouldn't want to pigeonhole us just for Spectrum. But I just love this. I just love the Speccy. There's nothing else to say to that. I just, you know, I could happily just produce a couple of box sets a year for stuff like, you know, Julian Gollop games and things like that. And I just are, you know, the Oliver Twins, and I'd just be happy. But yeah, I'd never say never, I would say.
No,
that's the thing. There's such a vast library for the Spectrum anyway. So yeah. I guess you've got games going around in your head of what you could do.
Yeah, it's just getting those rights. Where the main legwork is. It's making sure that it's all buttoned up and you can actually produce these things legally and safely without, you know, stepping on anyone's toes or, you know, and paying proper dues to the people who made them and making sure that they're sorted out as well, you know.
Agreed. There's also I'm going to cast some shade over the other platforms. The tapes have to be a lot longer, don't they? Measured to put C90s in.
It's a bit more expensive.
Yeah, because the board rate is like way, because everyone goes, oh, Spectrum games play 20 minutes. So, no, five. It's 5 minutes. Shut up.
Yeah. The odd 1-8K title used to take this time, but a lot of the 48K games, you're looking at 2 or 3 minutes. So.
2 or 3 minutes. Whereas a T64, not unheard of, 25, I think last year, 25.
It was ideal. You could pick a magazine app, read a review while it's loading. No problem.
Yeah. Our production arm, who are our partners who do the tapes as well, they charge by the minutes per on the reel, because basically how they produce it is they have this huge machine with a huge reel, and they load these bank cassettes in, and it goes whizzes it in. It's all copied and it spits out a tape and does it again. But depending on obviously the length of the tape is how much you pay for the production of the tape.
Well,
they're not cheap either. That's the thing.
No.
I used to buy your Sinclair magazine for bugger all back in the day, and there'd be a tape attached to the front if something happened like that. But I look at the production cost of the tapes and I think, wow, it's not the cry of poverty, but they're not the cheapest thing in the world to produce these days.
Not anymore, no. People still use them. But...
Yeah, 25 minutes it would be quite expensive.
Yeah. So C64 owners, you'll be paying a little bit more, I should imagine, if it does happen.
Don't change from the old days, really. Yeah.
And now we know why they were a bit more expensive. Yeah.
Now we know why.
Yeah. Right, so what is it that draws you to the visuals of ZX Spectrum games?
I guess it's just that sort of feeling when you grow up and play the games, you know. There's a really simple colour palette for the Spectrum. I think there's like a few base colours and that's it. They're also in the Pixel Talkie logo as well.
Yeah.
There's like a cyan and magenta and all sorts. And it's a very, very basic thing to work with. So it's like I know I've been drinking out of my Horace mug, and this isn't some shameless plug, but I genuinely use this as an everyday drinker. But
This was so friendly.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yeah, but these ones are just like, you know, the basic colours, and it's so it's just the same with the box as well. It's just so easy to produce. Well, and it's something simplicity about it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna
a lot of people say Spectrum games are ugly, but I just don't see it myself. Some games are obviously, but.
I mean,
I love ZX Spectrum graphics myself.
It's the great thing about the ZX Spectrum for me is the gameplay of some of the games is fantastic. I mean, my older brother and me, we will still, he's back in Belfast where I'm originally from, but we'll still, still do like a Teams meeting and play Chaos, Julian Gollop game, which is one of the granddaddies of like the first, or the granddaddies of turn-based strategy. And it's just one screen. It's literally one screen. Very simple sprites. You cast spells. You can have, you know, you can have gorillas and lions and dragons and stuff. And it's so simple. And you just kill each other. And, you know, that led on to things like Rebel Star. But it's the simplicity of it. The gameplay is the thing. But it's just the simplicity of those games. It's phenomenal. And, you know, 40 years later, I'm still playing them as well. It's just, it's great.
Yeah.
So I'm going to focus more now on the design of the boxes, because it kind of suggests that you're celebrating these games, and Warren suggests it is celebrating them. But one thing we haven't shown yet, and listeners may, and viewers, if you're watching, may not be aware of this, but so if you're not watching, you really should be, but the cassettes have got printing on them. So this is the Horace Goes Skiing one,
yeah,
which is just incredible. It's just got, I mean, you've got a screenshot of the game with the title on it on the cassette itself.
It's wow. It's to do with the advancement of technology. I wanted to stay as true as I could with the Horus games. I'll take the original and my one back up again. So we re-view everything. Everything's all high res with graphics. But when it came to the tapes, they're all quite basic. They're all very, I wouldn't say boring, but and there is a certain sort of nostalgia about. This is the Hungry Horse one, but then this is my Hungry Horse one. So it's kind of just trying to inject a little bit more fun and making it a little bit sort of different compared to what's gone. Because I could very easily reproduce this as a sticker and stick it on there. But I thought that the inlays are enough. I just want to sort of try to do something a bit more with the cassettes. And we've had really good feedback. There are a few purists who have said, look, you know, maybe it's not for me because it's not a complete copy, but... And I get that. I completely understand that. But it would have been easier to do that. But I design all this stuff myself. And it's just having that.
I think it just gives it a bit more life. It's just a bit more appealing on the eye, yeah.
Yeah, my partner, bless her, she, I would sort of fixate on these things. So I'd have for Horace, they'd have prototypes, all sorts of mad prototypes. And I'd sit and I'd design these and I'd print them out and I'd cut them up with a scalpel with a double set. And I'd sit and I'd, sort of, you know, on the sofa at night, watch the TV, and I'd obsess over it and, you know, do I need to tweak this? Do I need to tweak that? And it's that sort of, if I don't love it, I won't do it, you know, but that's the same thing with those tapes. I think they're fantastic. When I got the prototypes back for that, I was over the moon with them. I thought, these guys have done such a cracking job with the print that, you know, that going forward, I'll probably definitely do this again.
And it adds to the celebration of them, isn't it? As the core of the question was that are sort of standing by these games going, they need to be recognised for what they are and indeed what they were. And, I mean, personally, I would love to see, but I don't know who the rights are with, is I'd love to see a Beyond Software collection.
Hmm.
Like, you could have Doom Duck's Revenge, Lords of Midnight. I think it was Sword on the Shadow. I can't remember what the last one was, but there was a third one they did. But maybe, or just Beyond Software, because they made some wonderful games.
Yeah.
And there's those big yellow boxes, but, you know, we can but dream. I don't know who owns those rights.
I have looked down other avenues with other, you know, producers and stuff, and it's led me to all sorts of places, like, you know, talking to EA, for example, about Codemaster stuff. I've spoken to Sega, their rights people, about certain things because of other companies that through a sort of a line of being bought by Virgin and this, that, and the other.
Yeah. They end up
in, you know, these big companies, and half of them don't know, you know, what they have sort of thing. So, so you have to have long, drawn-out conversations with their rights managers and this, that, and the other. And, yeah, I won't go into it too much, but it's tracking it down is pretty hard. And sometimes people say they have the rights to something when, you know, maybe they don't. And I have independent legal advice that the chap I know who deals and that sort of thing, so I do talk to him occasionally, sort of about just to make sure that we're on the right track.
Yeah.
I sort of digressed a bit there, didn't I? Just one of the tips.
Yeah. Right, and next question. I mean, you've already slightly gone over this. Is the metal pins that you've released alongside box collections? Can you talk us through the designs of them?
Yeah, I've got a couple here, which you've probably held up a few as well there.
Yeah.
For example, the Horus ones were relatively easy. So I just wanted to take a couple of the sprites and then take a couple of elements from that particular game. So this one is this is Horus and the Spider. So we had the little moon and we had the little spider. So I thought we have a very set space. So I always design these within an inch square. And our supplier, so I said to them, so what I do is I just design the vector, like a vector outline of what I'd want. So I'd take Horus, for example, and say, okay, we'll simplify that. And then I work out the fill colors. And so you layer it up, and it's basically like this vector file that you send to them, and you say, you know, so the Star Strike as well. So there was nothing really stood out in the Star Strike game for me to make a badge because you're in a ship, you know, and it's difficult. So I thought,
bit awkward.
How intricate can we go with these? And we got the cockpit, we got the guns and things, and it's quite an involved thing. Just basically outlining it, making sure it's right, and making sure you keep the certain amount of colors down as well, because again, there's more expense in that. But I like him. I really, really like him. And from that as well, through talking to Chris from Crash, you know, I've designed badges for him now. So if you probably have one of these. If you own like a Zap one,
Crash one, or a Sizzler.
I designed those for
fantastic.
So through that and building up these relationships with some really, really, really cool people, we just sort of all work together now, and it's really neat. So physically seeing those, you know, in the flesh, I love them. They're shiny. They're sort of crisp. I mean, yeah, that 3D Tank Tool one as well. Again, I fell in love with that.
So yeah, busy. I love this one. Cool. This is awesome. It's so
colorful and chunky.
So good. So good. I do like that. Yeah, I do like that game. I just love discovering new game 40 years after it was made. but the lovely touch. I mean, I saw them because I didn't. I've actually bought the Horus ones when I was at Crash Live.
Oh, yeah. It was probably me or the half.
It was, so yeah. I bought them off you. Yeah. Because I thought, I like pins. Because I'll get those. and then when the Kickstarter for the 3D Combat Classics arrived, I immediately backed it with the pins. Pins.
It does mean a lot.
So this is our last question. Sorry, Paul. Good things must come to an end. It's been great. But this is the exciting part, everyone. So if you haven't been listening till now, listen now. What is next for Pixel Jockey? Because we've got something happening.
I'm glad you asked.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Not to take away from anything we've done before, because I stand behind everything, and I love the Horus collection, and I love the 3D Cobots Classics. They're fantastic. You know, some of the packaging we did with the Spot UV varnish and all that, and this is a custom box that we make ourselves. Absolutely fantastic. But I think the next thing that's coming down the line, which by the time this comes out, will definitely be launched, so I can talk to you about it quite frankly, is the 40th anniversary Magic Knight box set.
Very good. So this is
basically a magnetic closure box in the shape.
Oh no, it's not. Look at it. It opens like a little. There it is.
It's got a little snap. I call this the Codex. So obviously, it's meant to represent a book of spells or a tomb of spells. You know. It's finished. We had a couple of prototypes made, but we settled on the gloss for this one because it just felt a bit nicer. We have like a map version stuff, but so this is the box, and inside the box
is the four game trilogy.
Yeah, it's basically the quadrology.
Quadrology.
I'll tell you a story about that word in a minute.
Yeah.
Very boring. So in there we have.
Oh look!
All four games.
And you've got them in the original packaging, or
so basically, there's a little sort of magic box there. Okay. So the games themselves have been completely redrawn and remade. So all the artwork is brand new and crisp. I did all that myself. I mean, some of these took me about a day and a half to do just for the key art.
Right.
Obviously, the Mastertronic branding is off it because that's for the purists, you know, they may not appreciate that, but it's as a redundant company, we you know, I'll talk about all that in a bit. But
I think so the Retro Collective have that, don't they? And RMC have Mastertronic rights, don't they?
It's all
very complicated, but look at that Stormbringer.
Spellbound of Finders Keepers.
Finders Keepers was the first one, of course.
And what we did again, we're going back to the printed
labels. Oh, the printed label sets. There you go.
Because if you ever look up the I've got this sitting over there. But if you ever look up the cassettes themselves, again, they're not the most thrilling of designs. No. So I've had to completely redrawn, remake everything apart from these. These are new. So these are, again, just a sort of a homage to the key art, which has just been slightly readjusted and made to fit. They're also, where applicable, there's the 128K version and the 48K version. So each side has a different version. So depending on how you play it, what hardware you have, you know, I think it was Finders Keepers. It was only 48K. But the other three had two. So
they've got some great 1-8K music as well, those games.
It was, yeah.
Yes, they do.
It's just one of the earliest games to take on the 128 machines.
Yeah.
I seem to remember. Is that right, Dean? I think I'm right in saying that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, yeah.
But yeah, we're particularly happy with this. This is, I mean, again, I know we're behind this, but this is absolutely gorgeous. We love this. And when we got this back from the manufacturer, the prototype, I was over the moon with it. Again, it's got that sort of snap to
it.
Just one fault, Paul. That won't demagnetize the tires of tapes, will it?
No. It'll be fine. It's all right.
Good point. Thanks, Lee. No.
That's all we looked into. I think it's far enough away from it.
Hello, Future Chris here. You may have just heard Paul from Pixel Jockey state that the box that contains four audio cassettes has a magnet-based closing mechanism. Since the recording, Paul has replaced the magnet with a Velcro latch thing to prevent the tapes from slowly being erased by the magnet, which could have happened, as Dean mentioned, or has already mentioned, time's a weird, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly thing. Anyway, I'm now going to return you to the recording.
You know what? One of the things that I would recommend as a stretch goal, if I may, we're workshopping this. I use the word workshopping, everyone. Sue me. Is have you thought, because one of the things I've always needed when playing the Magic Knight games is a notebook.
Okay.
You have to have a pad of notes.
Yeah,
to make it like, I have to give that to that person, give that to that person, and they give me the thing. Where are they? So I think it'd be cool. Is not as a standard thing, but if you want it, you can have a special branded Magic Knight pad.
Yeah,
saying you,
I'm always up for ideas. Yeah,
yeah. So I think that because that's those games without it, because those in the 80s you had to have a notebook. In fact, I'm going to take that back. There's a lot of modern games. You know, I'm looking at you, Blueprints, that you need a notebook next to you to make any sense of what's going on. That's a very, very modern game, but if you don't know what Blueprints is, sorry everyone, it's like modern games you don't talk about it here, but yeah, you need a notepad. It's like, okay, that's I'm in a library now, but it's got a switch in it. Okay, I'll go. So I've always used a notepad when playing the Magic Knight games, because if you don't, you're just wasting your time. You're just wandering around aimlessly doing things. So, can't remember who said what to when.
I had a really long conversation with David Jones, the legendary chap behind it, and this Kickstarter has taken me. You know, I flew to Breda in the Netherlands, where David E. lectures at the Breda Institute of Technology and on computer game design. So I went over there, sort of like a flying visit for 2 days, and to interview him for it for the Kickstarter video, and just have a long chat. And I also chatted to him about Crash, but. It sort of all came about. This all came about when I was doing Horus, and it looked like it was going to be funded. So I thought, what avenues can we look down? I thought, well, what games did I love? You know, I had Stormbringer, and I think it was Spellbound when I was young. So I looked up David, and I just sent him a message, and he went, yeah, this is Horus stuff. Let's go. And we chatted and stuff, and I put a proposal to him, and he went, that's fantastic. He said, yeah, let's just go with it. We had a really good chat at Crash, and then I went to Breda. We had a good chat then, and then had a glass of wine afterwards, and I love this. And I know I'm actually lyrical about my own stuff, which is a bit uncouth, but I think people love this too. I think it's a really, really cool thing. We also have a few other things with it as well. So,
looking forward to seeing the pins on this one. I mean,
that's
countless pins obvious is Magic Knight themselves, but there you go.
We also have a mug as well.
All of the mugs.
That is lovely. We always have mugs. I've got all the mugs here, actually. We've got the Star Strike.
Oh, yeah. I did see them at Crash, but thank Paul, got way too many mugs. You've no idea. You've actually probably got every idea. But I do have, you can't see it because I'm it's behind my camera. I'm just pointing at it to my left. But I do have a print of all the loading screens.
Yeah,
And it's been signed by David Jones. The where he signed it, he signed it on a little flag, so you don't know where it's like. Is it signed? Yeah, look, you can see it. So that's fantastic. It's what I bought that. No, I bought it online because it was being sold.
He's selling such it, a nice chap as well, David. He's such a lovely bloke. Yeah. You know, I don't read it. We sat and we had a pint together in some lovely little square. It was freezing cold, and we sat and had some little bite. And I went back to we rented like an Airbnb, so I went back there, did the interview, and had a glass of wine afterwards. And he's just such a nice chap, you know. And it's nice to be able to sort of sit with someone who would have been a hero of yours, you know, growing up.
Mm.
You don't really think about it. You think this chap is the guy behind these fantastic games that I adored. It's cheesy, you know, but it's like, and I'm sitting here. So I sent the selfie back to my older brother of me and David. You know, Dave's got a silly hat on, we've both got tight. My brother goes, "Oh my God, that's David Jones." He's like, "Yeah, yeah." So he's freaking out. I was like, it's fine. It's me and David.
It's fine. It's so many people. On a more somber note, sorry to say this, but they're not getting any younger. Okay. These people are significantly older than us. And we've had people pass away since.
Yeah.
So capturing them and asking them, talking to them now is so important. And just doing this is a wonderful way of reminding people what they did and what they achieved. Yeah. And the Magic Night games, I don't know how they did it. Honestly, squeezing so much out of so little. That's astonishing.
I think we cover some of that in the interview. I will put, as part of the Kickstarter, I'll put the in-depth interview online as well that we did. But obviously, I'll put up most of the footage that we took, because we do go into detail with it. The other thing as well, again, to take away from that a little, is the t-shirt. For the first time, we're going to a t-shirt.
You got a t-shirt, yes.
Yeah, and where I live here in Somerset, it's a tiny little town called Wincanton, and also based in Wincanton is a thing called the Discworld Emporium, and they're this big. They used to have a physical shop on the high street. And they're the world's first, you know, and only physical Terry Pratchett shop, because he had lineage to this town for years. And our friends at the Discworld Emporium make amazing t-shirts, absolutely gorgeous t-shirts, and they send them all over the world, and they're known for their quality. And so I know Ian and Reb who run it, and I say, can I talk to your people who make your t-shirts? Like, yeah, of course, yeah. And you could even talk about this in the Kickstarter. It's like, that's fantastic. So we're going to have these amazing quality Magic Knight t-shirts, which you know, it's because I have a few of those Terry Pratchett t-shirts, and they're so cool. But we see the same production department that they have. I spoke to those guys, and they're geared up, ready to make those. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. I think I've sent you some images. I think you'd probably be able to
you'll probably see them now, or we intersperse this whole section with images of what you sent across.
Yeah.
Very excited. And when does the Kickstarter end? Because that's always a good question.
When's it end?
Starting, that's fine, but we would have started by the time we're talking, but when's it going to end so people got time to jump on?
You bear with me. I'm going to get a calendar up, so I still need to work this out myself.
I always ask this question because I'm a big... I mean, most of my Kickstarters are board games, full confession, which is the bulk of Kickstarters for games these days, for obvious reasons, although, you know. I this is one of the rare times I've actually backed a video game-like thing, and I'm very happy I did that. So, yeah.
Let me just have a look. Sorry to type when I'm talking.
That's fine.
So it would be 25 days from this Wednesday, which I believe would be the 8th of June.
8th of June?
Yes.
8th
of June. That's when it would end. So hopefully we're hoping to launch this Wednesday. I just have to button up a few things and finish the video, the main video. I'll sort of try to put as much effort into that as I can to really sort of sell it. You know, so we've got some really good footage and things, and yeah, we just want to make people aware of the product and the chat with David as well. And we'll do a more in-depth video as well with just his interview. And again, I'll intersperse that with images and things like that. But yeah, so 8th of June.
If you've got some spare change after you're buying your Switch 2, go get your.
There won't be much left after buying that.
Just saying. Yes, 5th of June is inscribed in my brain, Paul. Sorry.
The spectrum's more important. The spectrum's
this
more
is
important
way more important.
The Switch, so.
It's the 40th anniversary of these games, and it's a special occasion for David. So, yeah, he's behind it. He's excited. He's got his old stuff going on as well. He writes as well as he had a books and things like that, and he's also working on Magic Knight 5. But we've kept this under wraps for this has been, you know, nearly a year in the making. So it's been going on a while behind the scenes. So we're super excited about it.
Well, what's the website, Paul? The address?
Oh, well, if you go to magicknight.co.uk, that will route you to hopefully the Kickstarter when it's launched. But we are pixeljockey.co.uk. So that's us.
Cool. Lovely. So people know where to find you and buy all this great merchandise.
There'll be links all over the place to the Kickstarter anyway. So you might not be able to get away from it on some of the Facebook groups as well.
Yeah. Well, we'll link to it on our show notes as well, on our website and in podcast description and on YouTube. Yeah. Cool.
Fantastic.
Looks great. Looking forward to that.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a lot of effort went into it, and again, I wouldn't stand behind it if it isn't something that I'd want to own myself. So,
yeah. Very cool. That's I'm trying to think of what other products you can do with Spectrum. Those boxes that showed us at the beginning.
Well, you could redo the Tal Ceti one with the weird triangle. Remember that one? That was amazing.
That was his groundbreaking game.
It was fantastic as well. People didn't know what was going on. It's like, sorry, why have I got a text adventure and I'm shooting? I know, weird, right? It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. That's still one of my favourites. One of my all-timers. Well, definite all-timer.
I'll tell you another cool little anecdote. There's a gentleman called Ian Rawlings. He lives in a little village next to me. Now, Ian was a Kickstarter backer for the first one, Horace. So because he was literally, you know, with stones thrown from my house, I just messaged him and said, look, Ian, we have a couple of mutual friends and whatnot. And I said, look, Ian, do you want me just to meet you at the pub? And you could be the first recipient of the Horace Mock set. And he was like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
So I met Ian, and we had a fight in a beer garden, a little place called the White Lion in Borton. And it was a lovely day. We just sat there, and Ian brought along he had a collection of ROMs, like original Spectrum ROMs and stuff, like Horace ones and dioramas of Anthotac and stuff. And so I gave him his Kickstarter stuff there. We had a pint because the money he spent on the postage, the £4, I said, look, I'll give you the postage back, I'll just buy you a pint. And he's like, yeah, that's cool. So we met and we had a little pint and a chat, and yeah, really, really nice bloke. I also gave him some sort of on-made sheets of the packaging and things like that, and he was over the moon with that. He's had that this collection. So yeah, it's mad that people, you know, there's people all over the world have bought it, but a chap in the next village who's really a retro collector bought it as well. So that's quite cool.
Small world.
I'm still marveling at £4 a pint. That's strange.
Yeah,
it's
sort of I was paraphrasing a bit there, but yeah, I'll add another quid on there.
Yeah, I think so. And speaking of someone who lives in London, that's okay.
I was there for a number of years ago. When I moved to London in 2000, and for about 8 years, I used to work for the companies that make DVD box sets. So we used to take VHS stuff. So I worked for like Universal, Disney, Paramount, MGM, people like that, Fox. And I used to design stuff like the Simpsons box sets or the X-Files box sets or stuff like Ninja Museum with the slipcase and the lenticular. They all came through us. So that's where a lot of my packaging stuff comes from. So we used to take old VHS artwork that was like old, you know, even just scans, and remake these as, you know, DVD covers and things and on-body labels and posters and ads. And that's sort of fed into this a bit, because that's sort of my, you know, that's sort of fed into taking some of this old artwork and making it something a bit more modern and redrawing it and sort of rehashing it whenever I could. So that sort of came in useful.
Cool. Well, Paul, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Dean, you got any questions before we let Paul go? We'll sail off into the retro sunset?
No, I don't think so. I'm just thinking, like I say, I keep looking at my Spectrum Plus 2 box up there, and I'm just imagining new stuff you could do. I mean, that is so cool.
Yeah.
You know, for a product that needed it as well, that was a nice thing to do, yeah.
That's the manual was just like great. Plus 2 manual, I thought, as well. So yeah, this was the first thing. I actually put Pixel Jockey on the back because it was just as I was switching over. So this is the first Pixel Jockey product.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny. I've done an April Fool's joke. Sorry, just before we do go, years ago about the it was a ZX Spectrum Plus 4. And I've done a little picture of it, and It was
a CD-ROM drive, didn't it?
Yeah, had a CD-ROM drive stuck on the end of it.
Right, yeah.
So I'd love to see a box done for that.
Yeah, and it's all messed up. It's like, what is this? I've just bolted this. I've replaced the floppy with the CD-ROM because it made sense. And it was, it's basically the pre... It was done way before the Next even was a
It was years ago.
Yeah, we'll have to send you that over and go, oh, this is what we could do. Anyway, right, cool. Well,
thanks for being on, Paul.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks for your time. Yeah.
Yeah, and we wish you the best of luck with the Kickstarter.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We'll see. We'll see. Right. Hopefully it'll get funded.
I think it will.
Sure it will.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
See ya.
Cheers. No worries. Hello, listeners. This is Mass. You know, the sexy one. Don't forget, Retro Asylum isn't just the UK's number one retro gaming podcast. It's also a scientifically proven aphrodisiac. So be kind to yourselves and subscribe now.
That was good.
That was good. Nice guy.
Yeah, lovely fella. Although I've just realised we recorded using the wrong microphone. I was using this one, not that one.
It's a bit louder now, Chris.
It is a bit louder now, so sorry, everyone. You'll have to fix that in post, Dean. There you go. Bit of 4-4 breaking for everyone. Here it is. it's a lovely... Paul's a lovely fella. Enthusiastic about it. I mean, I just love the idea of creating a lovely selection of games like that.
Yeah, it's obviously a love project sort of thing. You know, he's doing it because he likes the games, not to make money. It's passion project is the phrase.
Passion
I was
project
looking
is
for.
The best way to describe it. But I think he has the skills to do it.
Absolutely.
It's one of those things where he's been doing it for decades, actual decades.
Yeah. And those boxes, you wouldn't know he makes them on his coffee table, would you?
No, you wouldn't, because he used to do this. He does this for a living, you know. It's just I used to make DVD cases, and people still, you know, as we know, Mads has gone off. He's moved away from streaming. He's gone to regular sort of audio, not the physical media. Yeah. And box sets still exist, everyone. People still. I think they do, but I can't remember the last time I bought one or even glanced at one.
No.
But they do exist.
They do exist indeed. Yeah, I don't even know if I've got... Well, I've got a Blu-ray player because of the PS5 and DVD player.
There you go.
But, old DVD player, not plugged in, or Blu-ray,
whatever. No, that's usually the way for most people.
Yeah.
Amazing. But no, that aside, I think it's a coming together of someone who likes video games... Old Spectrum games, notably, and has the ability to make these things.
Yeah,
and then added to that some gumption, you know, just like, you know what, I can do this. A lot of people, they stop at that point. They go, I could do it, but it sounds like a lot of faff. I don't want to do the faff, you know.
Well, I gotta admit, I'd be too lazy to do something like that, and it's always a risk, you know, when you're doing a Kickstarter. It does cost money for. Produce these things, but when you've got the passion there, I guess, and you know, Paul seems like a nice kind of guy and the right kind of guy to go about doing it. He's got the contacts, he knows his job inside out, he knows how to produce these things really well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's paying off, and they're nice.
Definitely.
They're nice little compilations, you know, the Horus games. Some people ain't the biggest fans of them. I enjoyed them for what they were.
I think out of the three of
the
them,
real-time
I think...
games are all really decent, I think.
Oh, God, yeah.
Star Strike 2 I'm not a big fan of because it's...
Yeah, I didn't want to
say
anything.
It's different to the first game.
It is very, very different.
Yeah. But the Magic Knight games are decent.
Yeah. I didn't go into the inlays, but I should have done that. But... they're authentic. They're directly, they're exactly the same as the original inlays.
Right, okay.
I should have done that. But, you know, I mean, if we're still recording, I guess. I could show you that. But if I show you the 3D Tank Duel one, so this is it, and then it comes out, and there's the tape, so as you've seen that already. But the inlay, it's got all the It's all there in its gloriousness. All the text
and the instructions.
Because you're in tiny, tiny text. So for those of us who are in our 50s, are kind of squinting at the text. can't read this anymore. Can't read this anymore. My eyes were not what they used to be. But no, I really love them. And the idea of them expanding into the Magic Knight games is just inspired, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I just hope those magnets don't wipe the tapes.
Yeah. I mean, it crossed my mind and I'm thinking, do I ask? I better.
Yeah. Better, yeah. Because someone else is going to, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think you're fine. It'll be on Discord. What about? So, yeah. But I don't. I mean, I think it's fairly safe to assume they're never going to be able to do Ultimate. Could that be Microsoft, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of untouchable, I guess. But you never know. You never know.
Never know. Never know. You know, we can
never
dream.
Say never.
We can dream. I think the earliest, like, you could have Pst, and you could have Trans Am and Jetpack, like three 16K games.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
One that I was thinking of, which I should have suggested to Paul, was Back to School. Sorry, School Days, Back to School, and Contact Sam Cruise, which are the Mike Reedy games. Unbelievable. They're great games, and that would work well as a compilation.
Yeah, that would have worked. Yeah. Oh, so think about it now.
Well, hopefully Paul will watch this bit back and go, that's
good
a good idea.
Idea.
Yeah.
Good
idea. Definitely be interested in those. So, good luck to him.
Yeah, good luck to him. Do back to Kickstarter if you want, if you can, if you can afford it. Stuff.
Yeah.
But, thanks for listening, everyone. It's been another great episode.
It has. Probably a bit shorter than usual. But that doesn't matter.
No. Because the star is the guest and their stuff.
Yes.
If you want longer form stuff, you know, listen to the Knight Rider one. That goes on for ages.
That
rightly
does.
So.
Probably too.
Because that's a big old topic.
It is, yeah. And me, Steve, and Mark have got another idea for an episode, which.
Oh, yeah?
I won't. Yeah, it's.
Won't reveal now. Keep, you know.
I won't reveal it just yet because we've not done much on it. And, you know, Knight Rider took 3 or 4 years to produce.
It did.
In 5 years' time, who knows? You might get to listen to the next episode.
It almost became the vaporware of the Retro Asylum.
It did,
which is fitting. Because it's fitting because that's what became of the original Ocean game. They advertised it for 18 months. It was the regular, you turn a page, oh, look, there's the Knight Rider ad, and he kept on turning.
Yeah. Done same with Street Hawk as well, didn't they?
Street Hawk was the same thing and it suffered the same fate.
Airwolf, Ocean advertised Airwolf and it turned out Elite had the license, yeah.
Cheeky.
Yeah. Cheeky. Well, Ocean obviously thought they had the license. They must have paid someone something. Yeah, there was adverts for Airwolf from Ocean.
But then sadly, Elite took it and made an absolute abysmal poop. It is my
it was a hard
least,
game.
It's not a hard game. It's just nonsense. It's just impossible. I defy anyone to be able to complete that game. I'm sure there are people out there who have done it, but they're not human.
True. Right. So, shall we wrap it up then?
We'll wrap it up. It'll be nice, sort of like mid-sun, you know, it's a sunny day outside. It'd be terrible to be cloistered up here. I need some vitamin D.
Yes, because I'm sitting in the dark and it's starting to get a bit warm now that sun's out.
It is, yeah.
It's not unbearable.
And you've got to finish
your
Outrun cab, haven't you? You've got to finish fixing that up.
That's not going to happen today. Not now I've been invited down for dinner. So
Well, see you, everyone. And I'll be back, or maybe you've already heard me in the last episode. I don't know when we're doing an Evercade one. Who knows? Time, podcasts, it's strange. It's wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey thing. All over the place. But I no doubt I'll be doing a video again soon on a game. We have to decide what it will be, but it'll be something, because the last one I did was on the was iRobot, wasn't it? I like that game. It's a good game.
That looked good. Very nice.
Yeah, I tried Jeff Minter special.
Lovely.
All right.
Take care, everyone. See ya. Bye-bye. All right.